We started doing this Bible study 4 years ago, maybe? And when we were trying to think of what's a really, we wanted it to be something where, you know, if you've been going to church for a long time and you're still, you're just looking for a way to get plugged in at Perimeter, you know, maybe you're new to this particular church, or for someone who maybe has never been to church before and doesn't know anything about the Bible, we were trying to think of something that could be deep enough, yet also shallow enough that you wouldn't get swallowed up by it. And so the thing about just the idea of having encounters with God is that it really meets you wherever you are, because honestly, the need is the same either way. Whether you've been walking with the Lord for a long time or whether you showed up tonight because you thought it was like bingo night at Perimeter Church and you are like a friend tricked you into coming, you know, the need is the same. All of us need a fresh encounter with Jesus. And the good thing is that we, what we believe here at Perimeter, if for anyone that's new, is that the way that we encounter God, I mean, through fellowship, through creation, through all of that, but specifically through his word. And so that's what we're going to be looking at the Bible tonight, and specifically looking at Abraham. Who knows anything about Abraham? This is the part, this is going to be really interactive. So you guys just come on. What do you know about Abraham? Mm-hmm. Married to Sarah. Yeah, yeah. We're going to see some good things and some not so great things. Yeah, the old song, Father Abraham, you know, all the movements. I'm not really sure what any of that has to do, except that Father Abraham had many sons. And so he's known as the father of many nations. And I think one of the reasons why I always like studying Abraham and Sarah is because I am... what my doctors tell me is I am of advanced maternal age. And so I have that in common with them. You know, I'm a whole lot younger than they were when they had kids. But I think the main reason that I love studying Abraham is I can relate to him a lot just because he was a man that God chose and God made a promise to. Yet the fulfillment of that promise took a long time, honestly. And so he was someone, and just to tell you just a little snippet of my background, yeah, I grew up in the church, and so I grew up believing everything, you know, from this book, and so thankful for that heritage. But then all of a sudden life hits. And you're like, what does this have to do with real life, with this hard road that I'm walking? And that's kind of the theme of Abraham's life, is how do I continue to trust the promises of God even in the midst of life looking harder and maybe got the fulfillment of those promises taking a lot longer than he expected. So we're going to start by, you have a piece of paper here, and we're going to take a few minutes to read, and this is kind of the form of the night. We're going to take a few minutes to read this, then I'm going to talk about this for a little bit, and then we're going to have some time to think just kind of individually and then talk at our tables, and then we'll close with a song. So we'll do it that way. But take a few minutes to look at this passage, and you know, you can underline anything that you think might be important, put a question mark by something you don't understand. Feel free to, like, you know, mark up the paper and in anything you think is interesting, you know, underline, circle, anything like that. So, yeah, take a minute to do that. If you don't know anything about, I always want to just start baseline. If you don't know anything about the Bible, let's just take this Bible, for instance, the Bible is pretty much divided into four main, my words aren't coming. Is anyone that has been pregnant, do you know that it's the words just don't, they're just not there. And usually I'm in my pajamas by this time. That's terrible. But four different like acts, we'll say that. Fall, creation, fall, redemption, and then you can call it consummation or glorification. So pretty much creation. And so creation happens like right, let's say maybe these three pages. Things are great for a whole three pages. And then what they would call is the fall, which you guys are probably familiar with most of this. And then the majority of this is this stage of redemption. Basically, God looked down and saw that man had made a mess of things and came up with a plan and said, hey, I love my people too much to live without them. And so I'm going to send Jesus to redeem. And the very first step of that was started with this guy named Abraham. And so that's one of the reasons why this, why he's an important character. But these two passages, I think, you know, it would take us the whole, you know, till midnight to go through everything about Abraham. So I just chose two passages that we can go through. So what does God say to, and he starts off as Abram. What does God say to Abram? Go. Yes. He says, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house. And where is he going to go? Exactly. I love how God is so much more specific about the going than actually like where he's going. I don't know if anyone has ever experienced that with the Lord, because it's kind of like, hey, I want you to leave your land, your relatives, your father's house. And just to think about, like, this would be a big deal. How many of you guys moved here away from family? Yeah, that's a tough thing. Like, I remember when we did that, I remember it being a tough thing. But in biblical times, that was, like, not even a thing. It was just much less of a transient kind of culture. And, you know, when you got married, I can't even imagine this. When you got married, you moved in with your husband's family. Like, you certainly didn't go somewhere else. Wow, that would be so much. It's, you're recording this. You can edit that part out. I would love to live with my in-laws. That'd be amazing. But yeah, so he's saying leave your land, he might as well have said leave everything comfortable, leave everything that's ever been your identity your entire life, and go. And he's like, okay, so where are we going? Oh, I'll get to that later. I'll show you that later. You know, but he ends up telling him, you know, you're going to go to this land, and I'm going to make you a great, and it ends up, we find out later that the land ends up being this land called Canaan. And he tells them all this wonderful stuff about Canaan. This is a little bit, you know, later, you know, this land of milk and honey, and it's all of that. The one detail he happens to leave out is, okay, there's people living there now. So it's like God saying, go, I'm going to give you your dream house. And ISIS lives there now, you know, but it eventually is going to be yours. You just have to trust me with all of it. So you see this enormous amount of faith that God is expecting from Abram. So what else does he say other than go to the land?
He's
going to
bless him.
Yeah, he's going to bless him. I'm going to bless you and I'm going to make your name great. I'll make you a great nation. And then one thing I think is interesting that he says, I'm going to bless you, and so you shall be a blessing. So I love this idea that he doesn't just bless him just for him to sit around and be happy and blessed, but hey, I'm going to bless you so you can bless others. And that, you know, that looks like a ton of different things. But if you continue to read on through here, if you look for that lineage, you see that Abraham was the first of this lineage that you end up following, you know, through a guy named Joseph, which is, or Isaac. You see these characters, Joseph actually being someone who, you know, long story, but actually saved the whole nation because of his faith. And then, if you continue to trace this lineage, you end up seeing Jesus. And so the ultimate blessing to humanity coming from Abraham's line, which is really interesting because something that you'll see later about Abraham is they're barren, you know? So we'll get to that part too. So he's saying that they were, you know, I'm going to make you a great nation and I'm going to bless you so that you will be a blessing. Excuse me. But the first thing that he asks them is obviously that asking him to go. And I remember, I don't know if you guys have ever had a time in your life that you felt like God was calling you to go. And for us, so we, my husband and I moved here. It'll be 13 years. Isn't that crazy? 13 years ago this fall. And we were doing college ministry at the time, and Martin just wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't feeling like the thing that we were going to do forever. And Martin had gotten interested in graphic design. And so we started checking out some graphic design schools. And I remember there was one in Ohio we looked at. There was one in Savannah, you know, and there was one in Atlanta. So we're from Spartanburg, South Carolina, and so the only thing we ever knew about Atlanta is you'd fly through there, you know, and lose your bags, and you drive through Atlanta and get stuck in traffic, and so it was like, God, wherever, like, we'll go wherever, please don't send us to Atlanta. And even when we came to visit the school, we got in a wreck on 285, and it was just like normal. It was like, that's what everyone does in Atlanta is they get in wrecks on 285. You know, they're either stuck in traffic or in a wreck. Anyway, but it was neat to see that even we decided to go to the school in Savannah. And so we packed up our little tiny house that, you know, we had lived in for that first year of marriage. And all of our boxes said Savannah on them. And even now, I'm not entirely sure what our big plan was, because we were going to go to grad school. We had a little bit of money to pay for, like, the first semester. Like, I didn't have a job or anything. We just were going to go down there, and I was going to work at Cracker Barrel. I don't know what we were going to do. But it was about, I don't know, maybe 2 months before we were supposed to move that we got a call from a friend of ours here who said, hey, they actually have a campus for SCAD right here in Atlanta. They just opened it up, and the church where I work is looking for someone to, you know, to do part-time worship, part-time women's ministry. And so we ended up just kind of blindly moving here. And the interesting thing about it, the reason I share it, is if you were to ask us why we moved here, we would have told you, well, we moved here for Martin to go to school. Well, he ended up, because of him end up getting sick with a brain tumor, he ended up being in school here probably about 5 months. And it didn't take very long for us to see that is not at all why God had us move to Atlanta. So it was neat because we... I can relate to, you know, God saying go and us not really understanding the situation. And what we did understand about the situation, it didn't even stay that way. But I, like, now if you were to ask me, why did God bring you to Atlanta? I would say for Perimeter Church. Like, this is so much our home. But God sometimes takes us, brings us different places. I don't want it to sound like he's a deceiving God, but he intentionally gives us the information that we need at the time that we need it. And that's kind of how God brought us to Atlanta, which we never thought we would come to. But so back to Abraham. So between these two stories, so God promises, I'm going to make you a great nation. What happens, and what not, before we get to Genesis 22, anyone that knows anything about Genesis or Abraham, What happens between this first passage and the second one? So does Abraham, they just start having kids left and right? No, not at all. They're struggling with infertility. So are they waiting patiently for the Lord to fulfill this promise? No. What happens next? Oh, yeah, y'all already talked about her. Abraham says, well, clearly that the God of the universe needs my help in fulfilling his plans. So I have, you know, no, actually this was Sarah. Sarah saying, you know, I have this great idea. I think you should sleep with our, you know, hot Egyptian, I'm kind of reading into scripture here, our hot Egyptian servant. And Abraham's thinking, well, honey, if that's what you think is best, then I am willing to, you know, to serve in that way. And you think about, you know, what you guys studied with Hagar and just how big of a mess that ended up being. And honestly, that wasn't even the only mess. There's another story where they went to visit, where were they? King Abimelech, I think. Yeah, yeah. And they go to visit him. They're passing through, and Abraham has this great idea of, hey, let's tell them that you're my sister, because I don't want them to kill me, you know, thinking that you're my wife and that if he wants you, which is also a terrible idea. And the funny thing about it is he totally gets in trouble. And then Abimelech was the second king he did this. First he did it with Pharaoh in Egypt. And then he did, I was reading a commentary about this. And there are some theologians that think that this is the same story. They just kind of have the details mixed up. But the majority of theologians are like, no, it's not the same story. It's just, this guy just did it again. He's like, that's really kind of you. Yeah. But you see the God of the universe making a promise to Abram, and even throughout, you know, this story, you'll see God saying, you know, I'm with you. You see God being faithful and faithful and faithful. And then you see Abraham and Sarah being faithless and faithless and faithless. And one of the things, and I didn't put the passage on here, but I just think it's kind of a sweet segue in the story, is after the thing with Hagar, after lying to the first king, and almost getting killed. And then he goes and lies to the second king, and they almost get killed again. There's a moment where, I mean, I'm just kind of reading into this, but I bet Abram kind of felt like a dummy at this point in time. But you see, there's this story where God kind of brings him out and points up to the heavens and says, look up there. That's what your descendants are. That your descendants are going to be like the stars in the sky. And there's kind of two parts of that that's interesting. First of all, they still don't have any kids. Yeah. Yeah. And the clock's ticking. Yeah. But the other part of it is that there's nothing that Abram could have done to thwart God's plan. It's like, no, I didn't choose you because you were a great guy. I didn't choose you because I thought that you were going to have this enormous faith. I chose you just because he just chose him. He just chose him. And it was neat to see, you know, a lot of times people will wrongly view the scriptures as Old Testament law and New Testament grace. Just a wrong view of it, even though, you know, there's law and grace in both. And you see this beautiful picture. I mean, if you can just imagine God promising you something and then you doing a bunch of dumb things and just thinking, man, I'm sure he's going to pull. Yeah, I'm sure he's going to choose someone else. And then I'm just kind of bringing you out and showing you the heavens. And saying, no, Abraham, this is something I'm going to do, not based on your faithfulness, but based on my faithfulness. It's just a beautiful picture. So, second passage. And this is a confusing passage, so I'm not going to be able to explain a whole lot of it, but we'll still look at it. So, again, God speaks to Abram. Says, Abram. Abram says, here I am. The first time it was go, and talking about everything he was losing. And so we see a little bit of a connection here, because he's kind of doing the same thing again. He says, take now your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land. And like his language here, not just take your son and go to the land, it's take now your son, your only son, whom you love. It almost feels like he's twisting the knife a little bit here, but I think he's God's showing, I don't know what he's doing, honestly. But it feels like you can feel the intensity of it. So how does Abram respond to what God's asking? Yeah. And not just obedient, he rose early in the morning. Just amazing to think about. He rose early in the morning. And if you skip on to verse 4 and 5, he sees the place. Then he says to his servants here, he says, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there. We will worship and return to you. This is actually the first time in the Bible that word worship is used. Just kind of a weird use of that word. You think about, there's a ton of definitions out there about worship. Well, one of my favorite ones is John Piper. It's just simple. He just calls it worth-ship. It's just, worship is just showing God that he is number one and everything else is secondary, which is very much what this passage seems to be pointing to. And you guys read it and know that where it ends up, kind of where the whole thing lands, is he ends up not allowing Abraham to go through with it. And it really is, it's a confusing passage. I don't want to try to explain too much of it because, you know, if Jamie was here, I'd get her to explain it because I'm sure she understands it better than I do. But you kind of wonder if God's just bringing Abraham back to this idea that, you know, Isaac has always been God's. He's God's and he's always been God's. And Abraham's role in it is just faith and obedience. And so the two things, and I'll kind of wrap it up with this. You know, these two passages both can be kind of confusing at times, but the main focus of both of them is this idea of letting go. This idea of faith through letting go. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, that both of these, and honestly a lot of other stories in Abraham's life deal with this theme of letting go. And the beginning of it, even to think that he's talking about extraordinary blessing that he wants to give to Abraham. But in order for Abraham to receive that blessing, it begins with the letting go of something else. So, and I want us to, we're going to take a few minutes just to, you have some space on the back of your page right here. And I want you to journal just for a few minutes. I want you to think, well, and I'm going to give you a little bit of an out. I always feel weird asking like a highly personal question. And so you never have to share at your table. So you can, the question I would ask would be, what is something you're struggling to let go of? And the other way that you could answer this, if you'd feel more comfortable, is, what's a time in your life that you can, that you remember God asking you to let go of something and then ended up being the best thing? And ended up, you ended up receiving something far greater. So you can answer either one of those questions. When I think about what it is that we, as women, maybe struggle to let go of, you know, for some people, it may be a tangible thing, like a, you know, your dream house and that perfect subdivision and the perfect school district, you know, whatever that is, or maybe that that new Honda Odyssey that has the built-in vacuum. Does anyone know about this? I know. I mean, I'm just throwing that out as a, maybe people are struggling to let go of that and just, you know, that car you want to just run out and tell Dave Ramsey to, you know, talk to the hand and I'm going to just buy this on credit. But for most of us, I would guess that when we talk about letting go, it probably is something a lot less tangible than a thing, even though it might be a thing. I get a chance to talk to a lot of women who really want to be moms, and for whatever reason, God has not allowed that yet. And not that it'll ever happen, but there's a letting go that has to happen in struggling with infertility. And I think about other friends of mine that really want to be married, and there's a letting go that happens with that. Think of other friends who are married. And it's ended up being a whole lot less fulfilling than they thought, just to be really honest. And there was this picture that they had, you know, of like, you know, going to bed with Prince Charming and waking up with Al Bundy. It's just kind of, that happens sometimes. I think that happens to all of us in some season. But this idea of what does it look like to let go of those expectations? Maybe it's what, for all of us, it's what we thought our lives would look like. And they've ended up looking different. And asking, what is that thing that I am having to let go of? And when I say let go, I don't mean throw it in the trash can. You know, if you have a dream and you really feel like for us, you know, it was a long time before we started having kids. And even when we did have kids, and we struggled with infertility for years, and even when we did have kids, after we got pregnant, we were like, wow, I don't know if this was a good idea or not. And we're still asking that, by the way. We're still thinking, was this the right decision? But for us, there was a letting go of having kids, of being parents, simply because God was saying not yet. And as far as we knew, he was saying not ever. We didn't know. But in order for us to even live as people of faith, we had to let it go. It wasn't that it wasn't that we were squashing the dream, but we had to be okay with God never answering it the way that we wanted. You let it go because God deserves that trust from his people. That's just what faith looks like. But you also let it go because things that we don't let go begin to consume our hearts and minds in ways that aren't healthy. I want to share a quick email, and then we'll... I'll tell you right now where I am. The thing that I'm having to let go of the most... And this may sound silly, but this is just kind of where I am. Letting go of, my mom was a stay-at-home mom and just a really great mom. She still is a great mom. And I think about what it looked like for her to raise us. And I think about how different it looks for me to raise, for my husband and I to raise our kids. Because, you know, I'm a working mom. I'm not just a working mom. I'm a traveling working mom. And I'm the mom that always forgets the snack day, like when I'm supposed to be the one making whatever thing, you know, for the kids' party at school, and I'm running by the gas station and saying, "Hey, I got some Twinkies," you know, and that would be a mild example of how often I'm dropping the ball with mom stuff. And I know that may sound like a minor thing, but, and I don't know whether it's just in this area, everyone just seems to be able to balance all this stuff, and I just seem to be struggling all the time. And I was struggling with this a lot, especially when I was pregnant with the twins and I wasn't able to do much at all with Josie. And Josie had been like my little sidekick. We had been to 48 states together within the first 18 months of her life, like, which is just crazy. We just were road bandits. We just did it, you know. And then when I got pregnant with the boys, got put on bed rest, and at first it made me sad that she would ask, anything that she'd asked me to do, I couldn't do. And then it made me even more sad that she just stopped asking me to do anything. And so I would just, lying on the couch, I'm hearing her and so-and-so out there playing on the playground. And it really, I know it doesn't sound really tough, but I had a friend send me an email who also had a tough pregnancy, and she said, "When I was bedridden with number four and distraught over what a negligent mother I was being to my other three kids, my mother-in-law really encouraged me by saying," and this is a girl named Kimberly, her husband's actually a pastor here in the area. She said, "Kimberly, don't you think God's big enough for your children too? God's using this pregnancy to break you, but he's also using it to mold your other kids. He's writing their stories. So let him write them with this pregnancy." And she continues to tell a story of her four-year-old making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the other three kids. She said, "This pregnancy and the addition of two siblings is part of Josie's story and how God is molding her and causing her to become your little helper, with the prayer that a spirit of helpfulness will be something ingrained in an early age and carried with her wherever the Lord leads her in life." And that was, I don't know if any of y'all can relate to that kind of season, but it was me letting go and believing that God was big enough. Believing that God was big enough for my kids, believing God was big enough to take care of the things. Because whatever it is that you're struggling with letting go of, I don't know if you guys are like me, but you end up lying in bed and you know, all these sleepless nights, and then you realize, okay, the only thing that really accomplished was me being really tired the next day. You know, it's not like mulling over, you know, these life situations. It's not like it's really helping anything. And so what would it look like for you to let go? And I know that I said I was going to close with that, but just two things to think about letting go. We let go because it's part of the adventure of faith. That's what faith looks like, honestly. I had a friend say, "You can't necessarily call yourself a person of faith if you've never been willing to walk down a road that actually required faith. You can't really call yourself a person of faith unless you've ever been willing to actually walk down a road that requires faith." And that's letting go. That's letting go and God giving you more direction, like Abraham, giving you more direction about what you're letting go of than what he's actually going to give you later. But you let go because it's part of the faith journey. But you also let go because we believe that he never does. We can let go because we believe he never does. And I'll never forget. I was walking with Josie. We were at the beach and we're kind of walking. You know, she was really young. She just learned how to walk. And we're kind of just right there on the edge where the waves are, you know, so it's not like, but as a first time mom, I'm like, she's going to get eaten by a shark. It's like her ankles are in the water and that's it. But I remember her, you know, her dainty little fingers kind of clenched against mine a little bit, and then she'd see a shell, oh, shell, you know. So she's kind of holding on to my hand, and I'm right here with the death grip on her arm, because it's like, no, I'm not relying on her attentive, faithful grasp of my hand in order for her safety. And I remember having that picture of that being my relationship with the Lord. And sometimes I'm like this, holding on for dear life. Sometimes I'm like, oh, shell. And then sometimes I'm just like, my faith is nothing. But this never changes. His grasp, his faithfulness. And so in a lot of ways, we can let go of whatever it is. And I would even say, not to get too heretical here, I think it's possible you can even let go of your faith. And he's still got you. I don't know if you've ever been in a season where you've thought, I don't even know how to pray. I don't even know what I believe. But him, his faith being enough for both of you. Because it's never, the scriptures teach us, it's not about having big faith. It's about having faith the size of a mustard seed in a big God. So let's do this. Let's take just a few minutes to journal. So what is it, so back to the questions, what is it that God might be calling you to let go of? Or what's a situation in your life that you have experienced that faith journey of letting go and you really saw God show up in a way that he blessed you more by letting go than by clinging? Does that sound good? We'll do that, and then after about 3 or 4 minutes, we'll share a little bit at the tables.
Thank you, Laura. That was great. I love Abraham. I was telling the table last week, the church I grew up in really didn't teach the gospel. They taught you that you needed to be good to get into heaven, and all the greats in the Bible were great, and they did everything right. And I remember even growing up thinking, he lied about her being his wife. But I'm not supposed to lie. Thinking that, but everybody says that that's okay, but I can't do it because I won't get into heaven. But he's great. So it was confusing to me, trying to figure out what it meant. I just knew I needed to be good to get into heaven, but I also knew I wasn't good, so it scared me till I was 30 and really learned the gospel and accepted Christ. So I was so thankful when I finally realized, oh my goodness, Jesus, when he died on the cross, there's nothing more he could have done for me than die on the cross and take my place. And he took my place, and I can't be good enough. And that was good for my soul. But I love that God told Abraham to go, and he didn't tell him where he was going. My husband and I spent 2.5 years in Dothan, Alabama, and it was good for us to get away from Atlanta and have distance with family. But then God brought us back, and we were very excited to come back. Herschel got his job here at Perimeter, and we moved back. And for about 6 months, we didn't have a home, so we lived at my parents' house, and we lived at my in-laws' house, then we lived in somebody's basement, then we lived in somebody's house for a couple of weeks while they were out of town, but their two older kids were there. Then we lived back in my parents' house, and we were just living out of the car and everywhere because we couldn't afford a house because we hadn't sold our house in Alabama. Finally, we get a house in Suwannee. We had wonderful neighbors. And I was on my treadmill one day exercising, and I was just praising God for the job here, for being at the part of the Perimeter family because we were loving the church and loving our neighborhood. And we had Perimeter families in the neighborhood with two boys, our boys' age, like there are four families with kids our age. And I was so excited and just really thanking him for that. And all of a sudden, I just stopped and I felt God saying to my heart, I am so glad that you're so glad that you're back. This wasn't hard for me to move you back. He said, but I want you to take hold of my hand because I didn't bring you back for a lot of joy. You're about to walk through the hardest season of your life. So hold tight. And I remember thinking, what are you talking about? Because things are going really well. But by the end of that year, it was clear that my mom had Alzheimer's and she was only 68 years old. And then 5 years after that, my younger brother, who I just really adored, and he was the joy of my parents' life. He was everything to them. He was the center of their universe. He went to sleep on a Sunday night and did not wake up. It's the week of Thanksgiving, which caused a lot of turmoil in my family because he was kind of the one that kept peace. So there was just chaos, and my mother was getting sicker. Then we had to put her in assisted living a couple months later, and then my dad was just angry for the next 8 years, and my sister and I dealt with it very differently, and there was just so much chaos wrapped around it, and I worked in my family's business, and then I had to start working more because he was gone, and I was still raising my kids, and it just felt like a lot at once, and I even started working 4 days a week down there, and I couldn't really be involved here at the church anymore, and I felt like I had no community, and I thought, okay, this was you're about to walk through the hardest season of your life, but God... You know, I'm part of our PACE ministry here, and I was in a meeting with our leadership one time, and they were asking me how things were going. I said, I just so wish that I could tell you that I was so faithful, and I was holding on to God, and he was meeting me, and I was just praising him in the midst of the storm. I said, but honestly, I will tell you, I feel like I've been hanging over the side of a cliff, looking up at him, because he had me by my wrist, and I was saying, don't. Let me go. Please don't let me go. Because if you let me go, I'm just going to fall in this hole. And he never let me go. And he was so faithful. And he taught me so much about the sin in my heart and the generational sin in my family. And I just can't even describe everything he did for me in that. And he grew me up a lot. And I wish I didn't have to walk through that for him to grow me up. But my dad and I had a really difficult relationship my whole life. He just wasn't a very happy man, so he yelled a lot. And I disappointed him a lot. So in that, I had a hard time often trusting that God was not disappointed in me. But God taught me how to forgive, and he taught me the joy of forgiveness. And he gave me such a love and compassion for my dad in his later years. And when he wasn't yelling at me, we laughed. And he still yelled a lot, but I felt so much compassion for the hurt that must have caused all of the yelling in his life. So anyway, I'm glad I didn't know ahead of time what he was doing and why he was bringing us here. I'm glad he just said, go back to Atlanta. Yeah. And I'm not telling you what's coming. And so even watching my family's struggles and everything, we are in a hard season with our grown kids right now. They both have deep-rooted anxiety, but I realize that's part of my dad's story. And so I can at least walk alongside them in it. So anyway, God... that's a long explanation for how faithful God is. But just the older I get, the more and more I look back and I see his hand and his faithfulness and just how he never leaves and he never forsakes. And his promises are true. And even in the midst of the storms, he's the one holding on to you and he is still being faithful. So, I just thank you for this lesson. I thank you for Abraham and his crazy life. And I thank you for just reminding us of God's faithfulness. So.